voices.
Welcome to World Soccer Talk, the podcast. I am your host, Nick Webster. You can find me on Twitter, at Nick Webster, joined by Nate Aburaya. He's finally untangled himself from a messy, messy situation in Reading. And of course, the one, the only Robin Bird, who's managed to put down his Chardonnay glass just for a second. Boys, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Morning.
Good to be back, sir. Thank you for having me.
That's right. No Nicky Hollander, he of the Peter Frampton fame and the bad mic. He texted me earlier today to say that he had to go coach a girls' game, to which I replied, "Oh, you're going to Old Trafford." Boom, boom.
But ching!
His Tottenham team, as we speak, getting royally undressed. And Kartik Karashnaya, well, Mr. MLS Orlando City, he is traveling. So it is the three of us to talk about the self-proclaimed world's greatest league, the Barclays Premier League. And before we get into all the football talk, the big headline of the day was Wayne Rooney in a knockout blow with Phil Bardsley. Now, I don't know if either of you chaps have had a chance to view the footage yet. Supposedly, Bardsley's better half said, "Oh, Wayne was just pretending." But having watched the footage myself and actually put on the gloves a few times in my inglorious past, Wayne Rooney definitely got knocked sparko by Bardsley. Let's start with you first, Nate. What do you make of Wayne Rooney coming back from a night on the town, putting on the boxing gloves in the kitchen and sparring with Phil Bardsley, his former teammate?
I think the response to that is going to have to be based on what I just witnessed here this morning in Redding, California, which is Wayne Rooney be instrumental in a fantastic three-goal half for Manchester United, score the third goal on just an absolutely majestic individual run where he breaks down four different Tottenham defenders in the process of it, makes them look like schoolboys, puts it through, and then as a celebration, goes and throws three punches and acts as if he's getting knocked out onto the floor. I mean, it was one of the greatest goal celebrations of all time. Brought back shades of, as a Liverpool supporter, Craig Bellamy and John Onorisa back in 2007 at the New Camp
club,
in Barcelona.
Yes.
The golf club incident where the next day, literally the next day after the golf club incident, Bellamy scores the goal assisted by Risa. It was vice versa. I think they both actually got goals in that match, which was incredible. And that celebration put it all to rest. And so credit to Wayne Rooney for being, from a public relations standpoint even. I mean, this was brilliant, the celebration today. And in my opinion, it makes it a dead issue. He's able to have a little bit of humor and make fun of himself. And dare I say it, credit to the maturity of Wayne Rooney here.
Well, I love the media reaction because concussions have been high on the list of everybody's favorite things to talk about. And obviously, looking at the footage, Wayne definitely cocked the back of his head. And I think even the NBC commentator, Arlo White, was like, "Ooh, and there was a cupboard nearby and it could have been a lot worse than it really was." Bertie, I know you didn't see the celebration, but have you seen the jab by Bardsley? If he gives up football, I tell you what, he might have a career in the ring.
Yeah, you know, I think Wayne Rooney should be pretty careful about mixing alcohol and friends and putting the gloves on.
Is that the voice of experience?
Well, no, I'm just, you know, I mean, my friend Nate has probably got himself in a few tangles over the years with alcohol. So
Easy, steady.
What kind of message? Listen, we have to look at both sides of the coin. I, for one, think it's hilarious that Rooney's got pissed up. He's gone home. He's put on the gloves. Wants to do a little bit of sparring with Bardsley and has got himself knocked out. But on the other side of the coin, the media side of the coin, you have to go, what kind of message does this send to the youth of football?
Oh, my goodness.
The England's captain goes out on the piss one night, decides to come home, gets involved in a boxing match and gets himself knocked out.
I love that Nick Webster, of all people, is reminding me of the pastor's wife from The Simpsons. "Won't somebody please think of the children? Give me a break." Oh my goodness. He's made it, in my opinion, a dead issue. It was move on with life. It cracks me up, this whole thing. And yeah, maybe you shouldn't get into things when getting knocked out is a potential outcome. You should be a little bit more careful with that. I think that's what we can take away from this is, hey, Wayne, just don't put your chin out there to get jabbed like that again.
Yeah, keep your hands up. Well, let's talk about the game instead. Manchester United versus Tottenham, 75,000 on hand at Old Trafford, which was potentially before the game a big game, as Tottenham definitely having Champions League aspirations after making a fine comeback from their League Cup debacle against Chelsea. Well, Manchester United certainly put that to bed, giving them a nice box around the ears. United stay in fourth place, the gap between them and Liverpool now five, although Liverpool do play tomorrow. But this, in my opinion, the finest 45 minutes I've seen from Manchester United this season. They look like the United of old, just spraying the ball around, playing really expansive football, crowd getting behind them, and three very good goals, although I must say some of the defending by Tottenham was suicidal, Bertie.
Yeah, no, this was a fantastic game by United. That first 45 minutes, I haven't seen them play like that the entire season. And so finally, a team that's worth just under £200 million is actually putting together, you know, a decent 45 minutes. The second half, you know, you always felt that, you know, United were going to probably just carry on the way they were doing. But, you know, I thought Spurs came back into the game. But the first half, Herrera and even Matic, who hasn't played for a while, had a very, very good game. Carrick, obviously, he and Fellaini scoring the two goals. I thought Fellaini was also the big difference in the beginning there. I mean, he was causing all sorts of trouble, not just in the air, but also, you know, in midfield. So it was a good performance. But, you know, I expect this from a team that has so many talented players that have been underperforming all season. But you've also got to give credit to Van Gaal, who's been plugging away. They haven't been playing pretty football, but they've been getting results. And this is all about getting results. And if Man United can carry on the way they are, they will get in that, you know, that top four finish, which is exactly what they need to do.
The results business, United, six wins in their last eight in the BPL. Nate Aburea, obviously this one hurts you a little bit as it moves United further away from Liverpool. What do you make of Tottenham's performance? Because I did mention the fact that they rebounded after the loss to Chelsea in the League Cup with a couple of wins. They certainly have some big aspirations themselves, but they were just thoroughly dismantled and disrobed, and a bit of a surprise from a Mauricio Pochettino team that they could be so taken apart with such ease.
Well, in the absence of our good friend Kartik Krishnayar, who kind of rides that border of being the voice of reason and the voice of negativity, I would like to shine some light on the negative aspects of this match. And that is, if you're a fan of Mauricio Pochettino, you're a fan of Tottenham as a club. This reminded me of an AVB Tottenham team, a Sherwood Tottenham team, where thinking back last year when Liverpool put five past them, when teams were routinely scoring four and five against them, that first half really brought back some horrendous dark defensive days in recent past. And yeah, I'd use the word troubling, as you love that one, to describe the first half performance. And I think it's a shame because United, yeah, they played good football. I said how Wayne Rooney broke down four people, you know, basically, or took on four defenders essentially with that goal, the third goal. It was horrendous defending all the way around, and on set pieces, the Carrick goal especially, for someone to have that much space to come in on a ball essentially floating in midair and to come in and put his head on that the way he did and have the time to place that the way he did, I thought it was just absolutely shocking defending from Tottenham. And it could make you a little worrisome. I was hoping for a draw here. You speak to me as a Liverpool supporter. That's how you address this issue. I was rooting for a draw, and from 10 minutes in, I said, United's going to just run rampant this afternoon.
Well, shocking defending. I would go a step further and call it wank defending. By the way, you can subscribe to this fantastic podcast via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes, and also reach us on Twitter at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. The other Sunday game, Everton against Newcastle United. This one, an absolute monster for Everton, who have been falling down the table faster than a horse draws. Well, they get the 3 points, and they desperately needed it. Newcastle United looking safe on 35 points. Roberto Martinez finally relieving some of the pressure that was beginning to strangle him as they make their big-time run in the Europa League. And it was quite a good performance from the Blues, the Toffees. Where on earth have they been all season long, Nate? Because I know you've got a little toffee nose running through you.
They've been playing in something called the Europa League, where Roberto Martinez has put all of his competitive eggs placed in that beautiful, potential UEFA Champions League basket. That is what he's banking his life on. And we joked about this as early as September. And we always kind of threw out that last little thing of, it might be a dangerous game to play when you consider the domestic league that you call your own and trying to think that you're going to replicate last year's out-of-this-world performance when Everton were as good as I've ever seen them in my entire life watching them and watching them with such a definitely kind of a loving, admiring eye. And it was mesmerizing the football they played last year. We all knew that they weren't going to do that this season. And so of late, when you look at the form that they were in, that whole Europa League theory that we threw out way back when, September, October, it was becoming more and more clear. I start hearing a ton of people kind of jumping on that ship saying, oh yeah, they clearly have prioritized this other thing, and Martinez has just essentially shited off the Premier League. They were 1-7-2 in their previous 10 matches, I believe. And so this was a very, very big victory for a team just to separate them that little bit. You look at 18th place right now, the drop zone. Before this, they're 3 points off of it. So 6 off of it is a lot more, provides a little bit more
palatable, I think, is palatable may be the phrase. Everton will be off
today, Junior.
Yes, Everton will be off to Mother Russia next week for the first leg of their Europa League clash against Dynamo Kiev before returning home to good old Blighty and facing QPR on the Sunday. And we all know about the Thursday-Sunday rotation in the Europa League, Premier League, where teams often S the bed completely after returning from Europe. And you'd have to expect the same from Everton. For Newcastle United, John Carver, their interim boss, he's having an absolute shocker. I can't see him getting offered a new contract at the beginning of the season, Bertie. Have we lost Robin Burke?
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. Hello?
Honestly, if you could put down the Chardonnay for just a second, you are on a podcast, okay? That requires you to talk, not drink.
Drunkards.
Listen, it's 11 o'clock. I don't start till 12, so. All right, so how do I sound now? I sound all right?
Well, you're ready for your close-up.
Hello, can you hear me?
Other than your slurring, yes,
okay,
you're great.
Yes. All right, so the question in hand, John Carver. Yeah, he was always going to have this job on an interim basis. If he was going to do something miraculous and, let's say, win 60% of their remaining games, then there might be a shout. But the fact is that, you know, I mean, Ashley is happy just to keep things moving along. Today they got spanked, I mean, by an Everton team. And I might add that they played in the Europa League last week. So the fact that they came out and won 3-0 is a testament to Martinez and his players for actually coming back. Because as Nate said, I mean, they've been stinking it up all season. So this is a fantastic result for Everton. It sort of takes them away from the relegation area, a few more points above those teams below them. So this is a very important win. The test for them next week is against Dynamo, of course, and going there. But, I mean, to go back to Newcastle, yeah, their season is just going to sort of muddle along for the remainder of the season, as it is for some of those other mid-table teams like Stoke and now, and for example, West Ham as well.
West Ham. Hey,
that's a really important point that Bernie throws out there, that right after you're talking about the Thursday-Sunday debacle that has been, and even the Wednesday-Saturday one for English clubs in the Champions League this year, this was pretty impressive what Everton actually came out and did today. And they were playing in front. I don't know if you got to catch any of that match on Thursday. That was as toxic of an atmosphere as I have ever heard ever at Goodison Park, a place that I've attended matches at, that I've always looked at as very supportive of their club. The level of moans and groans, the level of almost protesting with silence through much of that match. It was like something I'd never really seen Goodison at that level before. And we always joke about so many certain other clubs, one of them being Newcastle, whose supporters are famous for turning on their team. It was very interesting to see how the Everton players were going to respond, and they responded incredibly, namely Lukaku, who had one of the most amazing Europa League matches that I've seen this entire year. One of the best matches as a forward for him, I think, all season. I want to end with this, and I ask the listeners out there, hit me up at NateWST, at World Soccer Talk. Get us up all on Twitter. Who do you have your money on to be the next Newcastle manager at the start of next season?
That would be a $64 million question, because Mike Ashley, the stingiest man alive, will probably go for the cheapest option alive. Let's stay in the Northeast and poisonous fans. 45,746 on hand at the Stadium of Light to witness the Black Cats get absolutely buggered by Aston Villa. 4-0, Benteke with a brace and Agbonlahor with a brace in the spell of 30-odd minutes. Aston Villa under Tim Sherwood certainly rocketing right now. They are flying. But let's talk Sunderland, and let's talk in particular Gus Poyet, who had to be protected, I think that's the best word, from some irate mad Mackems who I think wanted to get to Poyet and start physically attacking him because they just can't take what's happening to their team. Sunderland right now, if you ask me, and neither of you are, so I'm going to tell you, are my favourites for relegation. They are going to get sucked down. I mean, they're only a point ahead of Burnley. I think there is such a toxic mess at the Stadium of Light right now. I think that Ellis Short has got to make some moves. He's probably got to fire Poyet because it looks like the players have just lost interest. The crowd certainly are not on Poyet's side. And it's been, you know, it's been quite a few years since I've seen supporters that angry and that determined to get to a manager and have their say or thump him on the nose, Nate Aburea.
Well, I'd actually say the more worrisome sight was the drove, leaving in droves in the thousands when the third goal went in. I mean, it was 4-0 at halftime. Let's make that abundantly clear for this. And this was as bad as I've seen Sunderland look since Southampton put 8 past them back towards the beginning of the season. This was, in my opinion, the second worst performance for them this season. And the way that first half went, I thought, oh my goodness, it could be another 8-0 match in front of their home fans. And so, actually, that was the first one was at Southampton, but nonetheless, seeing 10 to 15,000 people walk out 35 minutes into a match, like, I know it was really fun to see, kind of, and just a little crazy to see the fans going at the manager and having to be restrained by security and all that, and that was kind of spectacular. The thing that would really crush me if I were a Sunderland supporter, and we talk about fans turning on their team is okay, because they're going to stay in the match. And you think back to that Everton Europa League game I was referencing, that actually the Everton players responded from that. There's no way to respond from people just leaving and straight up losing interest in rooting you on and losing interest in the game itself. Wow. That was heartbreaking to see 15,000 people walk out of that place 35 minutes in just as a football supporter.
Well, no, it could be a testament to the fact of Sunderland's excellent pricing of tickets, that the fans felt that, you know what, we've only spent a tenner anyway, not wasting too much money, as opposed to the twats who go to the Emirates, spend £130 and bored out of their brains but refuse to leave because, oh, you've just spent so much money on the ticket. For Sunderland, their next few games, I mean, and this is why I think they're going down. They've got to go to West Ham United. I'm sure Bertie will have a say in that. But, you know, West Ham aren't bad at home. They then, the timing of it is immaculate. The Northeast Derby.
Yeah, Newcastle.
Newcastle,
yes.
United. They then have Palace, who are flying, and then go to Stoke. So troubling times for the Black Cats. For Aston Villa, though, FA Cup semi-final on the horizon, probably against Liverpool, which they will win with ease.
Don't write off Blackburn, man. Did you see how organized they defended in that match back last Sunday? That was
please.
You're talking about an organized group. Hey, don't be hating on the Rovers. Don't be hating on the Rovers.
But Villa, they've got Swansea City. They'll travel to United. They'll travel to Tottenham. They have the cup replay before hosting QPR. But Aston Villa are a side reborn. Give Tim Sherwood his credit. People say that he might not be the most tactically astute manager, but they do say that he is a fantastic man manager. And when you look at the results and the players that are now playing out of their skins for him, most notably Nzogbia, Agbonlahor, Benteke, you'd have to say that Sherwood has gone in and done an incredible job. Now, Bertie, let's throw it to you. As a man manager, what do you want to hear and what do you think professional players want to hear?
He's obviously saying the right things. You and I and Nate have no idea what's going on in the dressing room. But, I mean, the one thing that Sherwood, even at the short amount of time that he had at Spurs, the one thing that he does do is he does give players who have been out of form, who have been struggling, he does revitalize them. He did that, with Adebayo. He also introduced a little bit of Harry Kane as well. So he's doing something for those guys to start scoring again. And that was the problem under Lambert. They just weren't scoring goals. They weren't in any of those games. So whether he's ruffling a few feathers, whether he's doing the old, you know, the hairdryer treatment at halftime, whatever he's doing the right thing. Now, the players also have to respect the manager. So there's a fine line there when you start ripping into a player that you still retain the dressing room. Now, he's only been there five games or something, but he's won the last three games. He's also endeared himself to the players and the fans by beating West Brom in those, you know, that league game and the FA Cup game. So he's really fortunate to be picking up these wins. But they're playing in the right way now. The fans are enjoying it. And if the fans are enjoying it, that takes some of the pressure off the players. So whatever he's doing, it is the Sherwood effect.
Well, Sherwood on TalkSport yesterday, he was asked that same question. So I was hoping to get the same response out of you, Robin, and you were like a million miles away, you complete muppet.
Yeah, but he's not going to tell the truth.
Sherwood said that his man management style is the following. Some players need a tickle and other players need a slap. A little slap and tickle from Tim Sherwood. Absolutely love it. And if you like a bit of slap and tickle, hey, hit us up on Twitter at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod, and you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And don't forget about Soccer Morning. It features Jason Davis. It's live Monday through Friday, 10 to 11:30 Eastern Time at worldsoccertalk.com/live. Unfortunately, it's not as good as this show. QPR versus Crystal Palace. QPR are going down in my estimation. Chris Ramsey, lovely fella, completely and utterly out of his depth. And of course, the man who, if he was a bar of chocolate, would eat himself, Alan Pardew, can do no wrong at Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace in the first half of this game and 24,886 on hand at Selhurst Park were superb. Saha, MacArthur and Ward putting QPR to the sword, although Phillips did pull one back for QPR in the 83rd minute with what, in my opinion, is the goal of the season. An absolute howitzer from about 50 yards. The ball travelled at about 150 mile an hour, but actually didn't move. It just swerved and dipped and did all kinds of crazy things, making Spironi a bit of a monkey. But let's give Palace all the credit in the world. They are zooming up the table since Pardew has taken charge. 33 points now, pretty much on the road to safety. QPR, though, wow. Tony Fernandes has spent close to, I think, £200 million. He won't be seeing any of that anymore, as QPR are just plummeting. And they're next few games, I mean, just huge. They've got Everton. They will travel to West Brom, who have made a remarkable resurgence under Pulis, before hosting Chelsea and then West Ham United. So the London derby is certainly going to have a massive effect on QPR's season. But, Robin, I just can't see QPR getting out of this mess. Right now, they look like a lost, beaten, relegated team.
They are absolutely in dire straits. I mean, 3 points from a possible 42 on the road. I mean, that basically speaks to their season right there. You know, because you know you're going to pick up the odd result here at home, even when you're at the bottom. But when you're playing away from home, you've got to pick up those points. So, you know, I mean, they've lost, I think, 8 of their last 9 games. And if you look at the teams around them, you look at Burnley beating Man City yesterday. What a freak result, but it's 3 points. It brings them a little bit closer, brings them a little further out of the relegation spot. But Queen's Park Rangers, like Leicester, they're just dragging themselves down. I mean, I feel sorry for Ramsey because he's just there just trying to just stop the rot. he doesn't have the players. You know, the fact that Wright Phillips is out there, I mean, I can't remember the last time he actually played a game of football, but I mean, they really are clutching at straws there. You know, Zamora was on the bench. He's somebody who can change a game for them. So they're just a muddled team, and Palace, credit to them. You know, it's the Pardew effect. He's got them up to 12th place, and they're playing football in the right way. There's no reason why Queen's Park Rangers can't do the same thing, but they're stuck. And I just feel like it's only going to get worse, especially from a financial standpoint. There has been some discussion that they are going to be done, and that could result in $20, $30, $40 million worth of compensation that has to be paid because of the financial fair play. So yeah, it's not looking too clever.
Well, the good thing for them is they do have the parachute payments. But to Bertie's point, I'll throw it to you. He says they don't have the players. Rob Green, England international. Anua, Stephen Coulker, lots of Premiership experience. Wright Phillips, Tarabat, Sandro, Charlie Austin, Crankar. I mean, surely these are players that have the ability to get QPR out of trouble, or are they just sitting on their asses counting their money?
I think this all comes full circle beautifully, because we transitioned to this affair talking about Aston Villa and talking about the remarkable things that Sherwood has done and the slap and tickle mindset and this man manager. And we come into Alan Pardew at Crystal Palace. And look, there's just something badass about someone being able to come in mid-season with an underperforming club and saying, hey, we're doing it my way now. It's just badass to see what Alan Pardew and Tim Sherwood have done at Crystal Palace and Aston Villa, respectively. And QPR, I mean, with Airy leaving, it was like, well, do you really bring in that type of guy? Is it worth it? Are we just destined to go down anyway? And I guarantee that if Tim Sherwood or Alan Pardew had gone mid-season to Queen's Park Rangers with Zamora and Austin in the form they were in, with the other studs that they got running around that entire field, I mean, you're talking about a team that easily could have stayed up. And so I'm not blaming the manager now, who's completely helpless, but it's just interesting how that all ties together, that what Alan Pardew has done at Crystal Palace and what Sherwood has done at Aston Villa, it's just awesome. And clubs can be saved by the right guy coming in. And I mean, Bertie, you're going to love this one, Mr. Movie Buff. I mean, being able to rescue a sinking ship, I mean, it's just incredible.
I think you make a very good point there. You know, it's the same with Pulis. You know, I mean, these are managers who have been around for a long time. Pardew, I mean, you know, you forget he's been in the top level for at least 15 years. The same with Pulis. These guys know how to do it. It's the same with Allardyce. Unfortunately, he's losing the plot right now. But yes, I think Ramsey, because he doesn't have that pedigree, he doesn't have that experience, and he doesn't have the ability to G certain players up. Because you're right, Nick. Queen's Park Rangers do have some players. They have some slightly jaded players there as well. But they're just not motivated right now, and they're not being pointed in the right direction.
Well, let me ask you this then. Okay, so the three managers we've identified, Alan Pardew, Tim Sherwood, Tony Pulis, what do they have in common? Who can answer that question?
Well, I think the one thing they do have, and I think I just pointed that out, they have the experience.
Wasn't the answer I was looking for, you complete and utter muppet. They are all English managers. All English managers. Shut your mouth, Yank. All right. How many times
British managers
have we seen... Who's British?
Pulis is Welsh.
Oh, it's Welsh. Welsh, bloody English, same thing.
Oh, my goodness, really?
Excuse me?
Wow.
Just say?
Same thing.
Welsh are just like the English?
Wow.
Well, he's been living in England a long time. The point that I want to make
is that... Born in Pilgwenly, Newport, Wales, as a matter of fact.
The point I would like to make is that, you know, we bash on the fact that there is a dearth of quality British managers, when in fact, they're out there. I think they just have to be given the opportunity. Who's to say that Pulis, Sherwood and Pardew couldn't do the same job with a Chelsea or a Manchester City?
I'll say that right now, right here, that they're just like all those overrated English players, that they can do great things for teams 10 through 20. They're fantastic fits for teams 10 through 20. That is what they are. That is what they will be forevermore, as this league has been internationalized in every way, shape, and form. And that is what those British managers will be good for. And I'd like to apologize to all of our Welsh fan base for the comments from Nick Webster. Anything that you'd like to direct at him, at Nick Webster on Twitter. We love you. We'll see you in Cardiff in a few months. Can't wait to see you guys. Love you.
I just think it's a shame that the Reading police force can't do their jobs properly and keep certain people
Let's leave that to another time.
Let's go to the King Power Stadium. 31,456 on hand as the Foxes drew a bit of a snoozer against Hull City. The Foxes desperately needing points as they are being cast adrift. Currently 7 points from safety, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. The interesting thing from this game, though, wasn't the game itself. It was the post-match conference, where Nigel Pearson got his knickers in a little bit of a twist and got into it with a local journo. And as the conversation ended, Pearson was caught on the microphone going, "You prick." Very naughty, Nigel Pearson. Certainly a manager who has lost the plot on a number of occasions this year. Surely, Bertie, Nigel Pearson can't be long for the world of Leicester City. Although, to be fair, having listened to the interview myself, I thought the journo was a little prick as well.
Well, that's what they're there to do sometimes, is to pull that stuff out. But, I mean, he'll probably be in Dubai soon with Keys and Graves in good company. But, yeah, it's unfortunate.
Now, Nate, can you translate that one? Is Bertie saying that Keys and Gray are pricks?
Bertie's completely lost the plot as well. We've said Nigel Pearson was going to get sacked. How many times? He's choking people and calling people pricks. I mean, this is a man who knows that no one can ever kill him. This is a man with infinite life. It is just incredible watching what he's doing at Leicester City. How he still has a job is beyond me. And no, I can't translate anything Bertie says. I don't understand half of what he says.
You know, the thing about Keys and Grazers. Okay, so theirs were sexist comments. That's the only thing that actually Pearson hasn't said. He hasn't said any sexist comments.
Yet.
But he's certainly been physical on the side. He certainly aired his laundry, and he certainly aired his physicality on the side of the pitch.
He's choking people.
But wanting to take on fans as well. So, the thing is, everything started off really rosy for Leicester and Pearson, and everybody was giving him accolades about he's the man. He knows how to play the game in the right way. But unfortunately, the pressure of the game, the pressure of the Premier League and the media, especially the media, has taken him to, has taken him to task. And he's clearly going to learn from this experience. The trouble is they're going down. A team like Leicester, if they lose players and, they start to miss out on the TV revenue for next season, that's a really unfortunate thing. I mean, they could be the type of Wigan, that type of team that goes all the way down to the Championship and can't get their way up for several years. So, look, Pearson's not the only one at fault here, but he is the leader, he is the captain of that ship, and they're going down.
You talk about the marathon run that is the English Premier League. Do you remember 5-3 against Manchester United? Do you remember how high on Leicester City people were early in the season? 5-3 against United, down 3-1 in the second half, 4 goals in the course of 20 minutes. I mean, that is just the most beautiful expose of what makes the Premier League so great. I mean, they were on top of a mountain that was 50,000 feet tall, and they have sunk down to Death Valley, and they are done. And I could see them going down and not coming back up for a while. And it breaks my heart because I think of all my memories at Filbert Street and all those great Leicester City times, but I could see them going down and not coming back up for quite a while.
I'm not sure about that. I think the parachute payments and the fact that there's a very loyal following at the King Power, I think Leicester City, if they get the right manager after the Nigel Pearson era, they should be okay. But yes, they are going down. They visit Tottenham Hotspur before facing West Ham United, so that's a three-pointer banker there for the Foxes. They'll go to West Brom, then Swansea City, and then a monster six-pointer against Burnley. Hull City, they are offering Steve Bruce a new one-year deal. I think Steve Bruce has done enough to certainly deserve that. Done a remarkable job at Hull City. They are not safe yet, though. Any chance that the Tigers get dragged into it, Bertie? Or do you think that looking at their fixture list, I mean, they've got Chelsea at home. That's always a tough one. Swansea at Swansea. They go to Southampton. They face Liverpool. Then they've got Crystal Palace. Not the easiest of run-ins for the Tigers.
You know, that's a good question because, okay, so they're on, how many points are they on right now? They're on like 28 points.
28 points.
Okay, so what...
Get a table, Bertie. God.
So what does a team that's close to getting relegated go down on generally? It's sort of like...
Well, I mean, in most points? Seasons, the point mark for safety has always been considered 40. This season...
Yeah, it's going to be lower than that.
The experts are saying 34 points should be the required number for safety.
Okay, so this is where it comes down to it for Hull. It's going to come down to what Burnley does in the next few games. Okay, they have 25 points. I mean, there's no way that Queen's Park Rangers are going to really make up the points. And obviously Leicester are down. So you're looking at two teams that are already down. So for Hull, it's all the teams around them. It's the Villas. I actually think Villa are going to leapfrog Hull. I think Sunderland, they've got some brutal games coming up. They've obviously got West Ham next week. West Ham haven't won. They've won like one game in 12 games. So I actually think West Ham will pick up the points there. It'll probably be an ugly game. But so for Hull, they just have to keep picking up those draws, the odd win. And I think they've got some games coming up where they can pick up the points. It hasn't been pretty for Hull of late, but it doesn't really matter. It's all about getting the points. And so they obviously have belief in Bruce. So I say they stay up. I mean, they'll probably finish in 15th, 16th spot.
Let me give you 15 through 20, and let me know what you think at NateWST. Please send all your Welsh pride hate mail to Nick Webster, at Nick Webster on Twitter. 15 through 20, guaranteed. You heard it right here. Aston Villa, 15. Hull, 16. Burnley, 17. Sunderland, 18. QPR, 19. Leicester City, bottom of the barrel.
I might have to agree with Nate Aburea for once in my life. And the segue is just perfect. Let's talk Burnley. It's a shame Kartik's not here, the little plastic man who pretends that he supports Manchester City since when? Maybe 2011. Although he does claim it was a little bit longer than that. So I'll give him 2010. Burnley, Turf Moor, 21,216 for one of the monster shock results of the season, and why the Barclays Premier League is considered the best league in the world. Burnley were in 19th place, right in the relegation zone where they still remain. However, Manchester City in second place, this one was a slam dunk for City. This was 3 points to get them back in the title race, to get them closer to Chelsea. And of course, in classic City fashion, they completely ballsed it up, with Boyd in the 61st minute giving Burnley a deserved victory. Now, before we get into the details of the nitty-gritty and the tactics of it all, let me just give you City's team. Hart, Kompany, De Michelis, Cliche, Zabaleta, Silva, Torre, Navas, Fernandinho, Aguero, Dzeko. These are names that I've heard of. Let's go to Burnley. Heaton, Shackle, Duff, Trippier, Me, Jones, Arfield, Barnes, Vokes, Boyd, and Ings.
Come on!
Sean Dyche, if he keeps Burnley up, I'm telling you, manager of the season candidate.
Because absolutely.
What he's done at Burnley and what he continues to do at Burnley and what the Clarets keep doing is they just keep playing football, keep believing in themselves, and they keep grinding out results. And when we look at Burnley's run-in, they're away to Southampton, tricky. They'll face Tottenham, Arsenal, go to Everton, and then Leicester City. Not many points on offer, you'd think to yourself. But after beating Manchester City, who's to say they don't run the table? Bertie.
You gotta love it. Go on.
Well, they're not going to run the table, but I mean, they're certainly going to maybe go up a couple of points. I think Nate made the point that they'll probably finish in 16th, 17th place. And that will be a good season for Burnley. I mean, Dyche is doing the right things. I mean, he is a man of men. He knows how to get the best out of those world-class players that you just listed there. You know, I mean, he's getting the best out of something that's pretty marginal at best. But, you know, this league and this season has been an odd one because teams at the top are still falling by the wayside to teams at the bottom. And I'm not sure that actually says a lot for the quality and the technique on display week in and week out. I think it's been a relatively poor season from that standpoint. But Man City have missed a golden opportunity to get a wee bit closer to Chelsea, especially after Chelsea's result today. They just seem to be missing something. But Burnley, credit to them. They have beaten some of the big teams at home. And they've done it through grit. They've done it through, you know, hard work and discipline.
And that would be British grit, because one of those players, bar Ashley Barnes, who for some reason has an Austrian nationality, are British players. Do you notice the way I say British?
Yeah, very nice.
That means there's
good
some Welshmen and some Scotsmen in the team.
And you have to respect those people.
Don't forget the Northern Irish, Nick.
You can never forget the Northern Irish.
Don't forget the Irish.
I just want to throw out here that if Liverpool beat Swansea tomorrow, you're talking about Manchester City sitting in second place with Liverpool 4 points behind them, Man United 2 points behind them, Arsenal 1 point behind them. I mean, the way City played yesterday, I could see them being the outsider looking in fifth place at the end of the season. With 9 matches left, the way they're looking right now, and especially when you look at Arsenal, Man United, and how Liverpool have looked over their last 10 matches. I mean, who's the crap form team of the top five right now? It's Manchester City. They could legitimately end up in fifth place. And I just want to give a quick credit to the fans of Burnley, who, you know, you gave me a lot of stick for this back a month and a half ago or so when I said that, you know, Burnley had this attitude of, hey, everyone's going to stick together. And you said, oh, what's that? Some of your American soccer crap, you know, motivation, encouragement, and enthusiasm. But no, we talk all about these toxic fan bases. We talk all about supporters just completely disowning their clubs and these just little wuss forms of pseudo protest. And Burnley has been the opposite of that, the polar opposite of that, and shows you the beauty of football and why it had me back as much as, you know, even in late 2014, saying, I hope these guys stay up. Because you look at what Turf Moor represents for the good of football. It's just awesome. And I hope that they stay up, legitimately rooting for them. We talk about the marathon run that is the Premier League. Do you recall back about 10, 11, 12 matches into this season where we were comparing Burnley to Derby County of 2007, 2008, saying that this was going to be potentially the lowest point total in the history of the English Premier League, and now we're talking about them staying up, and we're talking manager of the year? I mean, it's a pretty cool story, to put it lightly.
Absolutely fantastic. Talking of managers under pressure, that's going to be Manuel Pellegrini, who really must feel the noose tightening, the patience level at the Etihad Stadium. Well, it's the patience of a wasp on speed. Unless Manchester City can get a result against Barcelona midweek, I think we could be seeing the end of Pellegrini. There will be some changes at the Etihad come the end of the season, especially if City drop, like Nate summarizes. And to be honest with you, he's right. The informed teams are Arsenal, United, and Liverpool. City are currently all over the place with their leader, their on-field leader, Vincent Kompany, going through a horror show in terms of form. Aguero's not scoring. All this talent is looking at each other, wanting a leader to step up. Toure has really been missing since returning from the African Cup of Nations. I mean, he had one or two good games, but now he's gone into the toilet, and you'd have to say that possibly fatigue and maybe malaria catching up with City's talisman. Let's move over to Chelsea and Southampton. They were one of the early games this morning. Good old Diego Costa, the wind-up merchant of the Premier League, putting the Blues ahead. 41,624 on hand, but Tadic with a penalty. And then some heroic defending by the Saints, certainly putting the brakes on Chelsea and their runaway express train here in the Premier League, although they are still 6 points clear with a game in hand and with no more Europe to contend with. Chelsea and Jose Mourinho really locked in to claim the Premier League title, Nate.
Absolutely, and thank you for doing what kind of provoking something that we don't get to do too often, and that is address midweek Champions League football. Good on you, Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, you talk about a magnificent, heroic performance after Zlatan Ibrahimovic was shown one of the most just... I don't even have a word for it. I was about to curse right there. One of the biggest jokes of a sending off that I have ever seen in all of my years watching this game. And Chelsea, without a doubt, I tweeted this out back on that Champions League match day. There will never be another team in the history of English football, European football, the game all around the world. There will never be another team as good as Chelsea when it comes to surrounding and intimidating a referee. They are so damn good at it. I mean, it's sickening because they are legitimately skilled at it, like no other club that I have ever seen in my entire life. So I get it's kind of this weird credit to you for being the best manipulators in the history of the game. But yeah, they're still going to win the Premier League. I mean, this was a lightweight setback. I think they're going to make up in their next game in hand, and they're going to have a solid 9-point lead that'll shrink down to 5 at the least, and they're going to ride cruise control all the way to the finish. And that's that. And two trophies in a season, a League Cup and a Premier League in dominant fashion. I think that's a damn fine season for the smuggest manager in the history of the league as well.
Yes, a good return to the Premiership. I love the fact that Ibrahimovic said he thought Chelsea players acted like babies. And the nice thing is, I think for once UEFA are going to get their heads firmly between and out of their butt cheeks by reviewing this red card on March the 19th. And if there's any justice in football, that will be overturned, because it would be a tragedy for PSG to lose Ibrahimovic in the Champions League. But that's another story. Chelsea just grinding on remorselessly. But Southampton, wow, Southampton. I mean, how many of us gave the Saints a hope in hell going to Stamford Bridge, especially on the back of that Champions League debacle for Chelsea, of getting a result? They did, and they are still in the hunt for a Champions League spot. They are just 3 points behind Manchester United. Let's take a look at their next 5 games. Home to Burnley, away to Everton, home to Hull, away to Stoke, home to Tottenham.
My goodness.
That to me looks like a possible 10 points for the Saints, and I think that could keep them right in there, Bertie.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so United won today, so that actually puts them, 6 points ahead of the Saints. So, yeah, no, they're right in there. I think it's more realistic that you're looking at Europa League for them. I think the teams above them are playing incredibly well. I think Liverpool are pushing for that spot. I think Man United may be pushed out of that spot. But, yeah, after what happened at the end of last season and the beginning of this season with Koeman coming in, he's changed the way they look at their games. He's playing a much more attractive, stylish sort of game, but also with the backbone of being very physical and making sure that you don't give up too much in the midfield. And today was a perfect example of that. They actually try to boss Chelsea in that midfield, and they did a good job. I mean, Pella, unfortunately, has gone slightly off the boil. Mane is still a player that's causing lots of trouble for teams, and I think they will do very nicely over the next 5 or 6 games, and they will still be pushing for that spot. But I think they're coming unstuck just a wee bit, and I think the big clubs above them are going to retain the initiative.
But they don't play any of the big clubs above them for the next 6 matches. No. I mean, they have got such a generous schedule coming up, and I'm telling you, as all those other teams are playing their own matches, you know, Chelsea, I'm telling you, the Southampton are like cockroaches. You can't kill them.
Nate, you have to remember, it doesn't matter that they're not playing the top teams. They still are playing teams in all parts of the league. It doesn't matter. There are no easy games in the Premier League. And I think what's going to happen is, come close to the end of the season, it's going to become squeaky bum time for that fourth spot, which means a loss of money for finishing fourth, and obviously that spot into the Champions League. So I hope that they are there, because I'd like to see one of those bigger teams get dethroned. And hopefully I'd like that to be United and the Saints be in there. But it's still a long way to go.
Dethroned.
Squeaky
and
bum time. I was hoping for slap and tickle time.
Slap and tickle. Dethroned and defrocked. Yes. Well, there's definitely going to be some change in the order of the big four. You know, it's the big five. Liverpool have been on the outside looking in, but they managed the Champions League last year. It was Manchester United who dropped out. One of those two clubs is going to be on the outside looking in again, and it could be curtains for United. I mean, they absolutely do need that money. Now, I'd love to know.
Let's use Twitter again. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Manchester United or Liverpool on the outside looking in? At World Soccer Talk.
Was that your Nate Abarea impersonation?
Right.
That was spot on. Beautiful.
At World Soccer Talk. Hashtag WST Pod. And don't forget, you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes, and insult me at Nick Webster.
The last game of the weekend, West Brom, Stoke City. Oh, snoozerama. Tony Pulis pulling one on his old club. West Brom and Stoke, really, they are safe, and not really a great deal to say about them. But if anybody has anything to say, I'd love to hear it.
Where can they get a hold of you, Nick?
Crickets. I knew it. Crickets. The interesting thing for me in this game, Berahino didn't get on the score sheet, but wondering if he's going to get on the sheet of Roy Hodgson, as the England squad will be named later this week. And then right back for Stoke City, of course, the wonderful Phil Bardsley, him of the vicious right-hand jab. So, taking a look back at the Barclays Premier League for the week. Obviously, we're going to go on a break again. Snoozerama. I hate all these breaks. We do have some Champions League action during the midweek, where the final nail in the coffin of English involvement in this year's Champions League will be put in as Arsenal go to Monaco and City travel to Barcelona. So let's finish with those two, Nate. Any chance, a miracle for either of those two clubs?
I'll give none of them a chance in hell. They're both out, sadly. And Nick, you know, you're captaining the ship here. Have we not really talked about Giroud?
And you know what? That was superb, Nate, because I was just testing the pair of you to make sure.
Have we not talked about Arsenal, West Ham, and Birdie's boys getting their trousers pulled? Come
attention.
On.
I love it because, and it's the fact that you brought it up and Robin didn't, that just goes to prove my point that the man is absolutely smashed on Chardonnay. I mean, he's like in a world of his own. The
it's
Emirates Stadium, I wanted to save the best until last.
Oh, great.
60,002 on hand at the Emirates. Giroud just before half time. Ramsey with a late one. And Flamini with his first touch of the game, giving the Super Gunners, who are just absolutely flying right now in the Premier League, shame they can't do that in the Champions League, giving West Ham United a cruel undressing as more and more pressure gets heaped on poor Sam Allardyce. And I, before I get to Arsenal, I've just got to have a go at some of these West Ham numbnuts who are saying Allardyce out. Remember, this is the man that's keeping you in the Premier League. This was the man that actually got West Ham United up to fourth, allowing you to dream for just 1 second. This is a West Ham United side that has found their natural place in the Premiership. Yes, I'm sorry, lads. 10th is about as good as it's ever going to get. So the fact that you had that little dream for a couple of months, you should be thankful. You should be down on your hands and knees kissing the feet of Saint Sam Allardyce instead of saying, Sam out, let's run him out. Because I'd love to know, and we'll start with Bertie, who comes in and replaces Sam Allardyce?
I don't know.
I love it. Crickets. I love it.
I don't know. Come on, drunkard.
I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is you made a very valid point.
I'm surprised, Bertie.
You're just conceding. You're just conceding to him. You don't have anything to fight back. Give me something.
Hey, Nate, I'm surprised Bertie didn't say, I think it's Kendall Jackson's quite a, he's quite a good name. I quite like Kendall Jackson. He's cool. He's kind of crisp. And he's very nice on a hot summer's day.
Kendall Jackson did very well for Everton over the years. So you be careful about Kendall. West Ham, they are in the place where they probably, I would like to see them stay there for a while. So the fact that they're in 10th, The fact that they had that early run is great. And, you know, Dreamland, I can, you know, I can enjoy that for the time being. The one complaint that West Ham fans have had over the years, and West Ham have not played the West Ham way for a long time, so I'm not bringing that up as anything, but he has brought a very pragmatic stance to their type of game. You know, he still likes the big man up tops, and the fact that West Ham don't have that right now, that they're struggling to find any type of shape. You know, Valencia's gone and cut his foot in some very weird freak accident. So now West Ham are sort of down to bare bones. But listen, I'm very happy with the way things have panned out.
Oh.
You know, the game yesterday against Arsenal.
What a load of bollocks. I mean, really.
He says he's all, I enjoyed it for a little while. You rubbed it in our faces when they were in third place. You were sending us text messages Monday through Friday going, I'm in Chardonnay dreamland. Champions League football 2015-2016 when Sacco and Vanzetti or whatever the hell they're called up front were just playing the greatest football of all time. You were so in our faces about every bit of it. Now you're backing off, acting like you've been calm about it the whole time. Give me a break.
Let me remind you that not every fan of every team who supports a team in England has a Liverpool. Liverpool have had a certain smugness about themselves over the years, but granted, they've won trophies. They've pulled in big crowds and they've pulled in big players, but not everybody can be a Liverpool. So the fact that West Ham should be able to dream, absolutely. West Ham have been an up and down team over the years, like many, many other English teams. They don't have that luxury of being a big club.
When you teach history class, do you provide your students with Chardonnay?
I got to tell you, you have to enjoy the wins wherever they come, because sometimes they don't come often. So, yeah, you know, West Ham are probably in the place they should be. Will they go a little further down? It's very possible they could end up in 13th place the way they're playing. But you know what? This is why we love the Premier League, my friend.
Oh, what a load of bollocks.
Backpedal.
Okay, let's talk about Arsenal, the world's greatest team. Currently just absolutely sizzling hot in the Barclays Premier League. And the chance of Wenger out have kind of drifted away as Arsenal find themselves in their natural spot in the Premier League, third place. Possibly going to be to fourth place, but third or fourth, as long as they make Champions League football, everybody seems very happy at the Emirates. They do have the game against Monaco, where it is a mountain to climb, love the cliche, before taking on Newcastle United at St. James's Park. Then the game that I think will define their season in the Premier League, they will host Liverpool on April the 4th. That is just going to be a classic at the Emirates. Arsenal in the FA Cup looking secure for a place in the Wembley final. They'll take on either Reading or Bradford City. But this is a team that is beginning to get players back, most notably Walcott coming back from fitness. We've got Ramsey coming back. Ramsey, a Welsh player, by the way, a British player. Welsh. They're pretty good at soccer in Wales.
They're very good at soccer out in the country of Wales.
Odsil, you know, he's in and out, but he's doing something. I like this Coquelin kid. He is the I think he's been the missing link for Arsenal.
He's got Vieira tendencies,
yes,
wouldn't you say?
Vieira tendencies, and we've been waiting a long, long time. We keep on, you know, false hopes. We keep on thinking that maybe Gilberto Silva was the answer or Flamini was the answer, but this Coquelin fella kind of liked the look at him. And then Giroud, he's managed to get over his Monaco nightmare. And still scoring goals on a consistent basis in the Premier League. So Arsenal, I have to say, trending in the right direction. A little homage to our man, the stat man, who can't come on the show anymore because of the fact that World Soccer Talk slag off Fox at every single opportunity.
Every time I hear David Mossy's name, I just hear Sarah McLachlan's "I Will Remember You" playing in my headphones, and I get a little emotional. One teardrop comes down. I missed you, stat. Manchester City are going to drop below Arsenal. Arsenal are going to finish in second place this season. You heard it right here. They're 1 point off of them right now, and it could be in the next week or two that we're looking at two London clubs, 1-2 with Chelsea and Arsenal. I got to say, the Arsenal-Liverpool showdown is going to be outstanding. Those two teams could then meet in the FA Cup final as well on May 30th, which brings back so many great, great memories of the boy wonder of Michael Owen back in 2001, scoring after Fredrik Ljungberg had given Arsenal a sure victory, and my father was diving around the floor, chanting for his Gunners in front of all our British expat friends.
Yeah, but let's take into the fact that Stefan Onchow was a cheating bastard and decided to play basketball in the FA Cup final. It's a game where you use your feet, you cheating bastard, not your hands.
You know what? Thierry Henry should have put it away. Thierry Henry had one of the worst finishing days of his entire life, and on any other day, Henry would have broke down every defender on that pitch, and he would have put that goal in, regardless of if Hanschel wanted to use all two of his hands. It could have been any other day. Henry was a wank that afternoon. Michael Owen was a saint. Michael Owen was a savior. 2-1 to Liverpool, one of the greatest footballing memories of my entire life. Piss off, Dad. Piss off, Nick Webster.
Yeah, piss off. Sanchez, Ozil, and Walcott making up the dynamic midfield. The interesting thing, Sanchez has been a little bit off the boil. Wondering if he's getting the old first season in the Premier League legs, the old tired legs, Bertie.
No, he's doing just fine. I don't know how many goals he's scored this season. It's 17 or 18 goals. That for anybody is a good start to anybody's season in the Premier League. I think the one player that struggled on that team was Ozil in his first year, and he actually played very well yesterday. But it does. It takes a while to get used to the pace and the physicality of the game. And the other thing is, most of those overseas players from Wales and other countries, are used to having that winter break. They're used to having that winter break, and so their bodies can't sort of adapt to too many games during that holiday period. So I think Sanchez is doing well. Is he adapting to life in London? I hope so, because I mean he's the kind of player that you want to be around for some time, because it can only bring out the best in those other players around him.
Okay, let's wrap this one up. Nate, put a bow on this weekend, please.
I real quickly want to address anybody who has a problem with Olivier Giroud's supermodel actions recently. You know, if there's anybody out there who would tell the supermodel to go home out of your bedroom at 3 a.m, I've been hearing a lot of stuff about Olivier Giroud all the time. And I just wonder, are these opportunities presenting themselves to you? What would you do? What would Jesus do? All that good stuff. I am wearing, before I put a bow real quickly on the Premier League, I'm wearing a Celtic jersey for this pod. In case you don't know, Nick, that is a Scottish club from Glasgow with a deep Irish heritage as well. Those are places outside of those English borders. I don't know if you venture
Glasgow, Celtic, the team that Liverpool nicked You'll Never Walk Alone from.
Liverpool share a divine brotherhood with, as a matter of fact. To put a bow on this Premier League weekend, I can't put a bow on it. My team plays tomorrow, Liverpool-Swansea. What do you think the result's going to be? How many own goals does Jonjo Shelvey score for Liverpool? I'm looking forward to seeing the Gaffer's Club, Christopher Harris's beloved Swansea, taking on my Liverpool tomorrow. It's going to be a blast at 1 o'clock here in California. Look forward to it. Let me know what you think of what's going to happen, and let me know what you think of the pod at NateWST. And all of you proud Welshmen out there, let Nick Webster know how you feel at Nick Webster.
But.
The chase at the top is quite interesting, apart from Chelsea. I mean, I think Chelsea are completely underwhelming right now. And I think it's going to be a little flat till the end of the season. So the biggest enjoyment most season is down the bottom. And I hope that Burnley and I hope Sunderland can both start to pick up points and make it a bit more interesting.
That sums it up for me. Bertie's biggest interest is down at the bottom. And he didn't even mention, he didn't even clarify it, quantify it. Just to make sure the listeners at home aren't completely repulsed by you, Bertie was talking about the fight at the bottom of the Premier League table.
Thanks for translating it for our Welsh listeners.
Thank you. For me, the top five, love to see it go down to the final wire. Don't think it will, and I don't think anything's going to happen at the bottom of the table either, with Leicester, QPR and Sunderland all going down. I think the season may be done and dusted by next weekend. Who knows? But hey, don't be afraid to let us know at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod, and you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes, and insult me at Nick Webster. We'll see you all next week. Bye for now.
Come on, you are.
Is that the best you got?
So how are Liverpool going to do tomorrow?